Hello and welcome to Context India. I'm Faye D'Souza, coming to you from the city of Mumbai. On Context India, our aim is to give you an in-depth look into the world's most populous democracy from the inside. We're not chasing breaking stories. Instead, we're taking the time to deliver a fuller, more considered analysis of India, its politics and its people. In each of the four episodes in this series, we'll be taking a close look at a specific facet of what has perhaps been the biggest crisis India has faced since independence. COVID devastated numerous countries, but India's experience, especially during the second wave that began in April 2021, was one of the most shocking pandemic ordeals. The COVID impact, both in the short and the long term, will be significant. And that is why it is the focus of this series. In this first episode, we'll be analysing the role of government. I will be speaking with Priyanka Chaturvedi, Member of Parliament and a senior opposition politician, and Narendra Taneja, a leader in the ruling Bharatiya Janata Party, the BJP. We'll be discussing issues of accountability, crisis management, and why India has suffered so many avoidable deaths during the pandemic. We'll be closing each week's episode with a piece of pandemic art, music created by Indian artists in the many months that COVID was around. This week, we're sharing a tune by a group of folk rockers, Swaratma. Understanding how and why COVID wreaked such havoc in India, understanding what steps were taken and not taken by the government, and understanding the lessons from the Indian pandemic experience requires us to step back in time. At the beginning of 2021, India looked like it had beaten COVID. A stringent national lockdown during the first wave was followed by a fall in case numbers. The country was getting back to business as usual. The messaging from the Modi government was that India was a beacon for a post-COVID future.
1.3 billion se jyada bhartiyon ki taraf se duniya ke liye vishwas, sakaratmakta aur umeed ka sandesh lekar ke aaya.
Just 2 months after this speech by Prime Minister Modi to the World Economic Forum, India was in the throes of a catastrophic second wave with a new mutation of the coronavirus, the Delta variant spreading like wildfire. At the peak of the second wave in May 2021, India was reporting approximately 400,000 daily cases and 4,000 daily deaths. According to numerous statistical studies, however, these official figures were significant underestimates. But the Delta variant alone doesn't explain the magnitude of what was unfolding. The actions of the Indian state require some scrutiny. First, the governments. Yes, governments, both federal and regional levels, let their guard down. In March 2021, India's then Health Minister, Dr. Harshvardhan Goyal, had this to say about the pandemic.
I personally feel that COVID, if all of us remain together and if we have the right, I think that the country has the right approach, COVID is already on its way out.
Just 3 days after the minister made this speech, a group of scientific advisors, all part of a government-organized consortium, shared data with the Ministry of Health, indicating that new, more contagious mutations of the coronavirus were spreading in India. According to Anila Singh, a spokesperson of the Bharatiya Janata Party, the BJP, the onus to respond to scientific data was on the regional or state governments.
In central government and in the leadership of our Prime Minister Narendra Modi ji, we have got more than 70 committees to monitor the trend of this virus. And in February 2021, the committees had warned certain states like Kerala, Maharashtra, Chhattisgarh that they can see the surge of the cases in their states and they should be on alert. But somehow they didn't give any heed to these warnings and it spread in whole of the country.
The Prime Minister did have official meetings related to COVID-19 leading up to the second wave. However, they were significantly reduced between January and March 2021. In fact, in March, the Prime Minister had only one meeting with state chief ministers.
So whenever we think about the spreading of a virus, there are always multiple factors that are important. The Delta variant wasn't really within our control, but our ability to detect it and to act on it was something that we could have done if we had built better surveillance. And of course, there was no need for us to set up super spreading events that wound up spreading the disease to every part of our country.
It wasn't just one super spreader event. They were multiple. There was the Kumbh Mela festival, a Hindu pilgrimage that reached its most crucial phase in March and April 2021. Millions converged in the North Indian state of Uttarakhand, with more than 3 million people taking a ritual dip in the Ganges River on the 12th of April. On that same day, India recorded more than 160,000 daily cases. At the same time as all of this, campaigning for regional elections in West Bengal, Assam, Kerala and Tamil Nadu were underway. And the Prime Minister Modi and key members of his cabinet were headlining massive political rallies.
आज चारों तरफ मैंने ऐसी सभा पहली बार देखी है जी.
Any super spreader event, any place where very large number of people gather will be a problem. And if you look at the statistics, there would be 18 times increase in COVID cases in Uttarakhand during the Kumbh Mela. And in the elections also, we have seen huge rallies, very few people wearing masks. And, you know, cases have gone up in every single state where elections took place.
As case numbers soared and more people required hospitalization, India's healthcare system was utterly overwhelmed. By early April 2021, major cities like Bengaluru, Ahmedabad, and even the capital New Delhi were facing massive shortages of ICU beds and oxygen. By April 22nd, the Supreme Court of India instructed the government to, and I quote, beg, borrow, steal or import, end quote, to meet the skyrocketing demand for oxygen. That was the same day, April 22nd, when the government finally hit the brakes on big public events. But things had already gotten out of hand. By the middle of May, scores of bodies were seen floating in parts of the Ganges River, washing up along its banks. Crematoriums and burial grounds were full to capacity, and people were depositing bodies into the water. There were some critics who said that the media coverage of all of this was part of a conspiracy against the chief minister of the state of Uttar Pradesh, through which much of the Ganges flows.
When we see the optics or the pictures of dead bodies in River Ganges, or we see the Hindu cremating grounds, then I will say this is a conspiracy, because we never saw any picture of Shamshans, that is Muslim graveyards, only Hindus. Why? So because we have got a monk who is heading Uttar Pradesh.
Any analysis of India's second wave and its aftermath has to factor the country's vaccination policy. At the end of March 2021, India's representative to the United Nations delivered the pithiest summary of the government's priorities.
As of today, we have supplied more vaccines globally than have vaccinated our own people.
2021 had begun with vaccine exports skyrocketing, and India, one of the biggest vaccine producers globally, calling itself the world's pharmacy. India exported 66 million doses of the COVID-19 vaccines to 95 countries until the end of May 2021.
I didn't really have a problem with the exports in the beginning, because we were exporting at a time when cases in India were very low. And as good global citizens, it made sense to export at that time. But I think what was really needed was that we should have had a policy that was clearly spelled out and prepared to react to the situation domestically.
By the end of March 2021, India halted exports and ramped up the national campaign to inoculate citizens. In July 2021, Prime Minister Modi overhauled his cabinet. The headline change was in the Ministry of Health. Harshvardhan Goel was replaced by a new minister, Mansukh Mandavia. Another key appointment was in the Ministry of Information and Broadcasting. The Indian government was determined to change the narrative on COVID in the country. So what could have been avoided in India's pandemic experience? What has been learnt to prepare the country for future surges and outbreaks? Well, I'm speaking with Ms. Priyanka Chaturvedi, a member of parliament with the Shiv Sena party representing the opposition, and from the BJP, which is the party that runs the central government and several state governments, Mr. Narendra Taneja, who is a leader with the party. My opening question is to the both of you, but I'll start with you, Mr. Taneja. The pandemic second wave in India exposed the fragility of India's institutions and its healthcare infrastructure. Several critics are calling it an unmitigated disaster. Why did this happen? And who is mostly responsible, Mr. Taneja?
Well, the pandemic as a whole has been a challenge, not for India, for the whole world. You see, the second wave was in particular was a challenge, but India is a union of states and health is a state subject. Central government plays a very important role, but when you look at the various states, some states might have a little weaker infrastructure, so their challenges were bigger. But I think overall, when you look at the picture, they handled it very well. And in some cases, some states, they handled it better than the others. And the central government also, they worked 24/7, right from the prime minister himself to his entire cabinet and to all the senior officials.
Ms. Chaturvedi, I want to give you an opportunity to answer the same question. Was the second wave, in your opinion, an unmitigated disaster? And who do you think was most responsible for it?
As far as the second wave is concerned, there were some failures on our part. And just to put this in context, I must say, once the Indian Epidemic Act was put into place, the central government becomes the sole authority sending guidelines to various states, whether it is in terms of medication, in terms of treatment protocols, in terms of vaccination. Now, what happened with the second wave? We had election campaigns going on and total disregard to a second wave, which was happening across the world, was staring at us in the face, but there was no capacity building happening. We had started patting ourselves on the back about having, won over COVID as far as India as a populous nation is concerned. There was shortage of beds, there was shortage of oxygen, there was shortage of medicines, there was shortage of vaccines. And how do we plan ourselves better is something that we as a state and as a country would need to look at our resources to ensure that we do not face something like this ever again.
Mr. Taneja, we know now that in early 2021, there were scientists who had submitted reports to government warning of a very infectious variant that would wreak havoc on the country. Nevertheless, the government still allowed large-scale events to take place. Do you say now the central government would take responsibility for those avoidable deaths?
Well, first of all, you see, COVID is a global crisis and the world together is trying to meet this challenge. Once the central government takes the charge in terms of advising, yes, that's precisely what the government was doing. But then again, on the ground, that is the responsibility of the states. But to say that the government allowed rallies, the government allowed a Kumbh Fair and all, that's factually incorrect. Government never did that. Government had absolutely no role when it comes to election. That was the Election Commission of India, which is an autonomous organization that's not part of the wing of the government of India. And in terms of Kumbh Fair, there's a religious fair, which has been going on for centuries and centuries. There was a kind of, atmosphere in the country. There was a kind of informal consensus in the country that actually we are kind of coming out of it. It's a fact that second wave caught each one of us by surprise. No denying that.
Mr. Taneja, the New York Times put out an article saying senior officials at the Indian Council for Medical Research, the ICMR, forced scientists of elite institutions to downplay the threat of the pandemic to prioritize Mr. Modi's political goals. How do you respond to that?
Well, I respond to it. First of all, New York Times might be Bible for you, not for me. Now, the point here is that they might have talked with some doctors and others, but we government will go by the view that the ICMR or for that matter, any other organization give as a body the consensus that they have within the organization and accordingly convey to the government.
Ms. Priyanka Chaturvedi, do you want to respond to that?
I come from the state of Maharashtra. It saw the highest amount of caseload at one particular point in time. But we also realized the shortcomings in terms of where we could be lacking when the second wave strikes. Our task force was led by scientists, was led by medical experts. And everybody continued to warn that there's a second wave coming. And if you don't take measures, if you don't build capacities, you're going to have a problem. What unfortunately happened at the center was a clear declaration of we have overcome the first wave. There is going to be no second wave. And we went and gave away our vaccines as well. So these are challenges. And I think acceptance of those mistakes only makes you stronger and prepares you better for the future. To deny what is coming in the New York Times, to deny what is being reported in Indian newspapers, to even deny in your parliamentary question that nobody died of oxygen shortage, I think is an unfortunate way of preparing yourself for the future and the capacity building that is needed for the country.
You represent the Shiv Sena party, which runs Maharashtra, worst hit state in the country, home to Mumbai, which is our major business city, where the second wave really mushroomed. The 7th of April, 2021, Dr. Harshvardhan Goyal, who was the then health minister of the country, said, and I quote, "I have been a witness of the misgovernance and utter casual approach of the Maharashtra government in battling the virus. The lackadaisical attitude of this state government has singularly bogged down the entire country's efforts to fight the virus." What is your response to that?
Maharashtra was the only state which was reporting transparently. And the health minister stepping down is the biggest response that would come from the prime minister about what his statements were about.
Mr. Thanesha, do you agree that the cabinet reshuffle and the removal of the health minister in the middle of a health crisis was an acknowledgement of mismanagement on the part of the central government?
Cabinet reshuffle was long overdue, and Dr. Harshvardhan did a great job. I mean, his performance overall was absolutely superb. The point is, it's not about the center and the states. It's very easy to criticize. Maharashtra is a rich state compared to other states. Had they actually managed to contain the second wave, you know, within Maharashtra, the country didn't have to pay the kind of price it had to pay. They failed, completely failed.
Mr. Thanesha, at the beginning of 2021, the Indian government was justifiably proud that India was supplying vaccines to the world. But on the domestic side, by mid-January, the government had only ordered 16.5 million doses for a population of over 1.3 billion. When the second wave hit, producers had to break their export deals so that Indian citizens could be vaccinated. Yet at the start of June, only 3% of the population had been fully vaccinated. Why was the domestic vaccination so poorly planned?
Look, COVID is a dynamic situation globally. The moment we realize that actually we need vaccines more and the situation, you know, for our own people, we decided to put a ban on export. And right now, if you look at the 700 million people have been administered vaccine, look at the kind of, you know, what we have managed to achieve, including the state of Maharashtra and other states. I think it's remarkable.
Let's allow Ms. Chaturvedi an opportunity to rebut.
Actually, a fail, unfortunately, for Mr. Thanesha to make it political by saying Maharashtra failed to control. I thought that was extremely unfortunate because data will tell you where the answers lie and where the problems lie. So talk about transparency, sir. That is a challenge where I think India as a nation failed under the governance of the central government.
Ms. Chaturvedi, it's easy to criticize the central government, but if we look at Maharashtra with one of the largest state budgets and also some of the worst inequality when it comes to healthcare, shouldn't the Maharashtra government take responsibility for the fact that its healthcare infrastructure is inadequate?
I will accept all charges about higher numbers, about reporting numbers, etc. But I will not accept that Maharashtra was not prepared for the second wave. In terms of even identifying variants, we were doing it. In terms of ensuring that capacity building of vaccine happens, we were doing it. In terms of creating field hospitals, besides the hospitals which were government hospitals, we were doing it. We were the first state which put a cap on the kind of pricing that the hospitals were charging us. I must remind you of one fact, that nowhere in the world did the central government wash off its responsibilities of ensuring free vaccine to all eligible population and ensuring there were adequate stockpile of vaccines so that states are not left on their own and said, okay, now go find your vaccines on your own.
Mr. Thanesha, would you agree that the BJP during the second wave was also fixated on controlling the narrative and managing its image during the pandemic? In April, the Chief Minister of Uttar Pradesh, which is a BJP stronghold, told officials to clamp down on hospitals that were complaining to the media about oxygen shortages. The state even pressed criminal charges against one civilian individual who had used Twitter to request for oxygen for a loved one.
Well, you picked up one civilian case out of 1.40 billion people in our country. You see, the point here is that government didn't have time for this. We were busy saving lives. We were busy moving oxygen. We were busy doing whatever we can, the kind of support we can mobilize for various state governments and wherever possible ourselves directly. We were busy doing that. We didn't have time for managing image and those kind of things. That was not the priority.
Mr. Chaturvedi, one of the frequent criticisms of the opposition that you represent in Parliament is that there's no cohesive voice, that there haven't really been very vocal advocates of the citizens of this country during the second wave of the pandemic. Even in Parliament, when Parliament reconvened, the focus was not so much on accountability over COVID. Why is that?
As an opposition, we have come together for the first time, in fact, I would say during this particular session, 17 to 18 political parties came together to ask for answers from the government of India. And it was about COVID. It was about rising fuel prices. It was about Pegasus, which has to do with national security. So I would say there has been more cohesive response this time round, with many political parties who may have differences of opinions on various other issues, but coming together under one umbrella to be able to hold the government accountable. But government could not have answers. And by having the health minister step down just before the session began, it speaks for itself that government also gave a vote of no confidence, especially the prime minister, to the health minister's response to the pandemic. And obviously, whether you call it holding him the scapegoat, making him the scapegoat, and asking him to step down and take all the moral responsibility is another thing for the government to address, not for me really to say.
I have a question for both of you. Don't the citizens of India deserve accountability? Will there be an independent inquiry ordered so that we learn from these mistakes? Or Mr. Taneja, will the government continue to maintain that you did a fantastic job?
In terms of accountability, that's what the democracy is all about. That's why you go for elections. And elections are due in Uttar Pradesh. If we have not done anything, as some people claim, the point is the people of Uttar Pradesh are going to punish us. They have seen us working on the ground 24/7. They have seen that what we have done for the people. You know, and so they know best. When it comes to accountability, who knows better? In democracy, people know the best. My point was that Maharashtra as a state failed to control, the entire country had to pay the price, including my family. Yes, I admire your guts that you are still defending it. No, I want an apology from you because my family has also suffered.
I'm sorry. I think if that is the basis of apology, then I think the Prime Minister owes an apology to the entire nation. It's not just your family. There are many families that suffered, sir. Many bodies were found floating in the Ganga. Many deaths went unreported from states like Madhya Pradesh, like Gujarat, from Uttar Pradesh, as far as citizens of the country are concerned. Election is not the only mechanism of checking popularity and having served the people of the country. Democracy is also seen in the parliament. Democracy also comes when you allow the opposition to be able to hold you accountable and seek answers from you. Democracy also tells you that when the government has been given a chance to govern, opposition has been given the authority to question. That's how democracy works. It does not work on election-to-election basis.
Of course, in a democracy, election is not the only platform. There are many others. At the same time, media are asking tough questions. There are think tanks asking tough questions. Citizens are asking tough questions. Opposition leaders are asking tough questions. When it comes to democracy, it's important we have a strong opposition in the country. We want the opposition not to attack only the prime minister 24/7, but come out with alternative narrative. Second wave, you want to criticize, please criticize by all means. But tell us, please, Priyanka, tell us, how would you have handled this situation? Hear what happens from word go, attack prime minister, attack health minister, and get away with it and say, look, I won the debate.
I actually gave an answer to how the COVID could have been managed better by telling you that in the state of Maharashtra, it was led by scientists, it was led by medical experts. We created field hospitals, we decentralized power. So I would just say one thing. You can listen from the point of not responding. You can sometimes listen to get more ideas.
All right, Mr. Taneja and Ms. Chaturvedi, thank you for joining us here on Context India on Al Jazeera. I appreciate your time. And finally, on this show, we want to share our space with Indian voices outside of government, academics, and the mainstream media. India abounds with artists who create work in multiple languages. Every week, we'll be bringing you music created during the pandemic. Today, we're presenting an excerpt of a song in Hindi, Mushkil Mein Jeena, meaning living through tough times, composed and presented by Swaratma, a folk rock band from the city of Bengaluru in South India. It's a gentle reminder that even in grim times, we must choose to live. I hope you enjoy the music. I'll see you next week on Context India.
Oh, God.